the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Hello, Brains. Welcome home to On the Edge with April Mahoney. Today, all the way from New Jersey, we've got Donna Lynn Shaleri. I'm so excited to have her. There she is. Right there.
Good morning.
I always get my fingers wrong. Just as cute as she can be with that big old bright smile. We're going to talk about something very serious, okay? With this pandemic going on, folks are in the house together. And you would think that they'd be able to get along, okay? But no, they are ramping up, okay? Their emotions are on steroids. They are being cruel, and they are beating up on one another. Domestic violence, verbally beating up on each other, emotionally beating up on each other. See, I get so upset I can't even talk about it. Spiritually, how this is impacting their children, you know? How do women or men, in this case, devise a plan to escape and get out of these relationships? Victimization. So Donna is an expert in this. She has her own personal experience. She has her own life drama, but she also has redemption and recovery. And look at her. She doesn't look like she's the victim of anything right now. So Brains, help me welcome her to the Edge this morning. That is Donna Shaleri from New Jersey. Good morning, beautiful.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah,
thank you.
Me and the Brains need every plan of attack that we can, because the world is in a crazy place and their emotions are out of control. So tell us a little bit about you and your story and how you arrived to where you are today.
Oh my goodness. Well, I am a 14 and a half year survivor of domestic violence.
Wow.
I had met my ex-husband. I was actually a stock trader in the 80s when women weren't. And he was on the New York Stock Exchange, and we did a lot of business together, and we became best friends, and we got married, and you know, everything was wonderful until it wasn't. And he had been in recovery for cocaine when I met him, and not ever using drugs myself, not really knowing people, you know, using drugs. I really didn't realize the rabbit hole I was going down. If you're not aware of the drugs, of what they can do, he was sober when I met him. And he was even a drug counselor in prisons and locked wards as a volunteer and doing very well.
Wait a minute, let me dial back and hear that again. He was sober and counseling and then ended up being a user and an abuser?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because if you're not aware of the signs, or you don't want to see the signs that really are there, which we'll talk about red flags. We got married and I never saw him doing it, because back then in the 80s and in the 90s, they were doing the cocaine right on the stock exchange. You know,
in between trading deals, they go ahead and just get a line.
Yep, running cash. Wow. And running credit. So he ended up going through $800,000. And it just, it was unbelievable. And he wasn't doing them home. He was doing them at work.
He must have snorted a hole up in his brain. Good Lord, that's a lot of money.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. All his teeth fell out because they rub it on their gums. I mean, the body damage. But eventually, he went from being my best friend to incredibly irrational. So like if I said, that sky is purple with orange stripes, he would have been like, yeah, it is. Like he lost rationale.
I don't mean laugh. He loved it. Oh, God.
Yeah. And so, but then he became very ugly, you know, because they're always lying. He was always lying and covering. And he became very, very abusive. And you don't even know you're going down the rabbit hole. And because they're very charming. You know, people that are abusive are very charming. They're very nice. And, you know, life is fun. But then all of a sudden, you're gradually losing scope of everything. You're gradually losing yourself. And I realized, having been a traitor myself, like, I didn't even identify with the person on my business card anymore. I was getting so lost. But the constant yelling, you know, like, ask simple questions, you know, what are you, stupid? You don't know. Oh, it must be nice to be so smart. And all, you know, all these, you know, constantly, you know, beating at you. And I had, you know, two children. We had two children. And so you're always covering. So you're always juggling, and you think you're multitasking, but you're really not, because.
Let me dial back just a second. So mm-hmm. When did you uncover, when did you realize that, you know, your red flag went off and said, you know what? He's ticky, ticky, boom, boom right now.
When the stock exchange threw him off permanently. He had been released from the stock exchange. He had been able to go back, and finally they threw their hands up and they said, we're done. You're done. You're out.
So permanently he was out. Messing up at his job, and they were finding out that was going on. He was messing up on some trades, losing people some money. He got called on it. And so they gave him
stealing from fellow coworkers, stealing wallets, stealing money, stealing, you know, cash.
Ooh, was
people
he
coming good?
Was, you know, because it takes on different forms.
Mm-hmm.
So versus, you know, snorting, was he shooting, snorting, smoking?
Snorting.
He was, wow.
Snorting.
Wow.
Yeah. And you stealing from people we knew, you know, anywhere he could steal cash, coworkers, wallets were missing, things like that.
You know, that just happened to me. Yeah. So not the drugs or the cocaine, but a person that was on drugs and cocaine. They called me during this pandemic, during this emergency. And they said, April, you know, my mother is in the hospital. And I got to get from the East Coast to Las Vegas. I'm $25 short. And I'm like, okay, I know how much she cares about her mother. It wasn't an issue. I didn't just send her $25, I sent her $100. You know, she might need food or whatever the situation is. She gets there, whatever happens, she calls me, she covers her story. Oh, you know, okay, well, April, I'm here now and my mother's okay. And, you know, I say, okay, well, just keep me informed. Then she calls me a couple days later and she says, we're at her home, mama's been released, and I need some more money. And I'm saying to myself, now, look, I done blessed you and I gave you three times what you asked for, and you asking for some more. But my red flag didn't go up, and I'm pretty street smart, you know? I know it. Long story short, I see this post from her children on Facebook saying, don't respond to my mother because my grandmother is fine. My mother has reverted back to her old habits and all that. And I was just like, you know what? Okay, she bought me for $100. I don't have a problem with that. But I'm telling you, brains, those are some of the warning signs immediately, you know?
Yes.
And drug abuse is a sickness. It really is. You know, they don't want to be ugly like that. But when that drug enters their brain, you know, and then that's not enough. They need the speedball. They want to be up now. Then they got to take something to be down. They, you know, so I get it. I get it. And then a combination of alcohol. And then when they don't get it, the rage sets in. Was he physically abusive to you?
He could start, like, you know, pushing type of thing. But one thing the judge said, especially here in New Jersey, that if mental and verbal abuse, financial abuse, the gaslighting is unbearable. You know, it's payday and the money's not there. It's coming. That's such a horrible thing. For me, it resulted in a stomach disorder and continual migraines.
Wow.
And so the judge said, whether you physically punch somebody or your behavior causes them to become ill, that is physical abuse. So when I got the restraining order, that was included.
Okay, so now your children. Yes. I know for the longest time, you know, parents, you and other parents really try to hide that because you want to keep your spouse, their father, in the highest regard. No matter what, I'm going to protect you from this. But kids are not stupid brains. They live in the house too. They hear everything that's going on. They can see the change in this person's demeanor, mm-hmm. how they treat them, how they talk to them, their physical disheveledness. Mm-hmm. They feel this. So you can't lie to your children. When did you have that conversation with your children?
Oh, that was actually really awful. We left when my daughter was 8 and my son was 13. But the worst part was my daughter was a few years after that, she was cheering. I used to say, you know, they knew that there was the drugs. I used to say, pray for daddy to get well, you know, and try to not pour out hateful things. You know, when I left him, a friend said to me, don't become bitter. That's so important. Don't become bitter. Don't become angry. So what happened was my daughter was cheering. I guess she's in about 6th or 7th grade. And two mothers took it upon themselves, stereotype cheering mothers, to tell my daughter.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yeah. And it was, I'll never forget, it was at the Boys and Girls Club in front of everybody. And I guess maybe he stole from one of their sisters or something had happened years before. Both of these women were very well-to-do and actually cornered me on the field screaming at me about my ex's drug problem and everything. And that's how my daughter really found out. It was the saddest thing. And the next day, the mothers from her school actually all came to our house. They rang the bell. I'm like, oh, great. This is just going worse, to say that they loved us. But those two women, that was the absolute worst. You know, I mean, you could imagine at this, you know, football game, how many people were there. And that's really how my daughter found the worst of it out.
Wow. That's awful. So what
people
about your son?
Cruel.
You know, your son's looking up to daddy. He's, you know, 13 years old. He's, you know, he's getting his own testosterone. He's looking at his father. And this is a mirror image of how he's going to treat women.
Well, that's, you know, the most important. Most important reason to leave, because it is a learned behavior and children will side with the abuser. And so what happened was when he was 13 and things were spiraling, I left him October 1st, 2005, and he would find me at cash machines to steal money from me.
He'd stalk you to the ATM?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like working 3 jobs, trying to finish grad school with these kids. Like I'm going crazy and then have this insanity. So he would take the kids from me because we didn't have anything legally set yet. And he would just take them away from me, but then bring them to friends' houses. And fortunately, one of the friends was somebody I went to high school with that was a police officer. So that was actually, you know, lucky. And he was spiraling. So my son was angry at first because he was close to his father and he did sports with his father. And, you know, when my ex was sober, people liked him. But then what happened was my son was really angry. So when we got to that first summer, I sent the kids to my sister's in Ohio. And I had my ex in his fury sign a form that said that my niece and nephew-in-law had permission to treat them medically in Ohio for the summer so that he couldn't say they were kidnapped. And he signed it in his rage. He didn't even know what he signed in his rage. So that helped because my son then went out to Ohio and spent a lot of time with my nephew-in-law, which, you know, was a good male role model at that time. And he was very kind and things like that. So when my son came back and it was then, you know, getting ready for high school, because he was now 14, and he was angry because we were changing high schools and things. But then one day he said to me, you know, I get it. Thank you. You know, when he was 14, I get it. And so, but we lived a family lifestyle. So I didn't do the single mother thing. You know, we spent Sundays at, you know, friends' barbecues. Like we kept.
So you still incorporated daddy into.
No, he was gone. He was gone.
Okay. All right.
He was gone. But I, and the courts actually took him out of their life. Because what happened was when my kids were returning from Ohio, he wanted to, you know, come and take them. And he was very high, very out of control. He was threatening to kill me. And so I had called the police department, and I asked for three guys I had gone to high school with, and they were on vacation that August. So the desk sergeant said to me, I would feel comfortable sending a car. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. Because when you're a victim, you don't even know you're a victim. No, I'm fine. Because you're juggling and hiding and covering so people don't know. And when the officer showed up here, and my ex called, and he answered the phone, you know, officer, you know, his name and everything, you know, Wayne Police Department, my ex, not listening, threatens to kill me again. So he said to me, okay, this is domestic violence and you have a problem. I'm like, no, I'm fine. And they brought me down to the police station, and unusual then, not only did I get the restraining order, but the children were on it. Now it's easier, especially in New Jersey, to get children on the order. So when we went to court, I had a wonderful judge, the late Judge Wax, who was very involved with domestic violence, and he put the children on the order. And he was ill, my judge, and he had it put into my court file that I was rational, reasonable, and respectful. Wow. And I was one of his last cases, and he died. Mm. And so when any other judge had my file, his words of me were there, which really helped, because I did my divorce pro se. Okay. And so his words were very helpful. So building that family unit and staying focused on your kids. So Friday nights, taking my daughter and her friends to the football, you know, local football games, or the Sunday barbecues with friends, and just, you know, driving and supporting. I was even, my son played football 1 year. I was a booster, you know, like the football booster clubs, which is all the fathers. Right. I was like right there with the fathers. So I kept that going.
Where was your family? Where was your mama and your daddy and your brother?
I don't have a brother. I have a sister, but she was out in Ohio with her own situation, you know, her own things going. Okay. My parents had a large house and we moved in, but they didn't really want us. So they kind of were more re-victimizing the victim, like, oh, this is your fault. You know, oh, you should have married somebody different. You chose him, you know. So they...
I'm looking up this. There's a bird. He comes and he's perches in my window every day. So
good that's morning. Good.
Good morning. We have Donna with us today.
Oh, what type of bird is he?
He looks like a little sparrow, but he comes every single day, and you know, just perches here around the same time. So he wanted to welcome you. So
thank you.
We have the distraction, but you know what? I think that he's bringing synergy and energy. Yes. Because he's also a vehicle of communication.
Absolutely. And my totem is actually the hawk. So I love all the birds. Yeah.
So, okay. So maybe your mother didn't, was it mama? Who was the, and I asked this for a specific reason. Was your mother more, it's your fault. Just go ahead. You've married up, honey. The money and the house and this, that, and the other, and you've got the kids, stay there. Or was it your father? Oh no, this is a good guy. And you know, he can't be doing this to you. Or was it a combination? Mm-hmm.
It was no, well, we lost everything. Mm. Because of COVID, we lost the house, the cars, everything. I mean, if there was anything not to lose, I mean, he lost everything. So I just want to go back. When I left that day, I had $500, a Jeep about to be repossessed, and two kids, and that was it. Mm. He managed to lose everything. No, my parents were more concerned of, you know, my mother used to say, I'll know I'm a successful mother when both my daughters are married, you know, which is the worst advice to give your kids. So they were more, you know, they're more materialistic. They're more, I think, embarrassed that, you know, we were there.
Did your mom come from money, or did she build her wealth with your dad?
No, my grandparents were all immigrants from Italy. They all settled in Paterson, New Jersey. My father's father was a barber. A lot of old people still remember getting haircuts from my grandfather in this area. He was, you know, the barber. Mm-hmm. And my other grandfather, he did manage in the 30s to actually, you know, buy a three family house and everything. But he, my grandfather, had been a weaver, and he had been involved in the labor movements in Paterson that were pretty instrumental into unionizing in the country. So they were hardworking immigrants. My parents.
And the reason why I ask these questions is because, number one, victims always look to the first line of support, which is the person that's right next to you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Your mother, your sister, your girlfriend. These are people that when they're in vulnerable positions, they feel that that's their go-to team. Okay. And then when they are shut down by those individuals that they think are going to be there to support them, now your abuser has more ammunition. They don't want you. Mm-hmm. You're not worthy. You don't want to go back to your mother's house. You're nothing. You're this. They start with the verbal attacks.
Yes. And I was lucky that I had friends support.
You know, and it comes from, you know, a culture of, I say this with love, I'm not talking about your parents, but it comes from a culture of ignorance, because women are supposed to be submissive, you know, and especially coming from other countries, you stay with your husband no matter what, or honey, I want you to marry up and get a nice guy that's going to take care of you and provide for you, and you stick with him no matter what. He can't be that bad. He's not doing this, you know, so they hear that. And then that's, again, like I said, it's just more ammunition for the abuser. I have another.
Yes, it was.
I have.
But my mother's. Oh, no.
We can cut down.
My mother's family wasn't like that. My mother was. So my sister had been married, you know, a few times, and my grandmother had helped her. And my grandmother, I guess maybe she hadn't been happily married, and she had always wished she could have left her husband. So my grandmother wasn't that way. My mother was that way because my mother wanted to play like Miss Suburbia, you know, like this whole phony image. But like her sister-in-law that she had been close to actually had worked with Margaret Sanger at one time. I mean, my Aunt Lee was revolutionary. They were actually beatniks and then hippies. And like, so my mother, no, it was worse because it was more materialism. It was more, you know, oh, if my daughter has her own house, it was more phoniness.
Right. And they did it, you know. So I have a family member that was verbally tortured by her husband. Mm-hmm. I had never seen nothing like this in my life for over 25 years. Mm. He kept accusing her of having a relationship outside of the marriage. Now, my family member is as square as a pool table and just as green, Donna.
Okay.
That's not what she's doing. Okay. That is not what she's doing. And he would follow her. He put a tracking device on her car. He publicly shamed her in front of people, accusing her of something. It was crazy. But what I didn't understand is, why didn't she leave? See, I'm a fighter. I will scratch your eyes out, okay? Mm-hmm. And I won't take it. Why do victims stay there? And everybody's situation is different. Sometimes they don't have a place to go. But why do they stay? Right.
The national average is it takes a woman 7 attempts before she leaves.
Wow.
Because you're so brainwashed. You have no value. Financially, what are you going to do? If you don't have support, or like myself, the re-victimizing, again, I was just lucky I had great friends. It makes it hard. And the women is, you know, blaming themselves, and women make a mistake. Well, what about, I've been in rooms with women, you know, will somebody else want me? And I'm like, oh my goodness, don't even worry. Like,
girl,
another relationship.
The last thing you want is somebody else to want you. You gotta want yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I try to tell, you know, explain that to them. So, and then if we throw a pet in the mix, because usually people that abuse women and children also abuse the pets, that brings the average to 11 times before they'll leave. So, you have to wake up in yourself, and see that, there's something else out there. You have to have that aha, that awoke moment, which I finally did, because I didn't think I could leave. I thought I was already 80. My life was over, you know, and I was only in my early 40s. You're just so devastated. Like, I didn't identify with my old business card. Like, you're just so lost, and you're so, you know, brainwashed that, you know, women don't realize. And I remember when I went to my first New Jersey Coalition to End Domestic Violence meeting down in Trenton at our state capitol, there was all these women at this giant round table from all the different domestic violence centers in the state and, you know, talking about legislation and law. And I remember starting to cry, and they all looked at me, and I'm like, all you people were working behind the scenes to help me. And there is so much help out there that women don't realize. It's very emotional the first time you see it.
Right.
That there's actually this whole mechanical system going, you know, creating shelters and training and all these different things. You know, we don't bring enough awareness in our schools. One, how to prevent domestic violence. And two, you know, how do you help yourself or other people?
Okay, so let's move to that. Give us three things that a person right now that's in this situation that's watching this, okay? Because I got brains that's watching this all over the world. You know, again, you're trapped in the house with the coronavirus. You're scared to go outside because there's a race war. You don't have any money. You've lost your job. You've got the kids looking at you, mommy, mommy, mommy.
Mm-hmm.
Give us three things that they can do right now, Donna.
Well, first thing you could do, law enforcement is still working. You know, never take the law into your own hands. Never. There are too many women sitting in prison that have taken the law into their own hands. I can never emphasize that enough. Also, tell a friend what's going on. Let somebody know, somebody that you trust, really important. That's not going to go back to the abuser. You know, what is, you know, going on. And talk to the children about having an escape route if things are going to escalate, you know, for the children, you know, to run to, or maybe there's somebody they can trust, a neighbor that they can, you know, run to, because, and call 911, call the police. They can come, they can help you. I always very scared for when women want to take this into their own hands. Also,
sometimes you've had enough. I don't know if you ever seen that, the family that, I don't think it's the family that prays. I'm not sure the name of it, but it was a Tyler Perry movie. Mm-hmm. I'm a deer had to hit him in the head with a skillet and throw some hot grits on him. Don't do that.
Because you'll be the one arrested.
Yeah, but what happens is when you had enough of this and nobody has listened to you and haven't heard you, you feel that that's the only way out. So now give us three more things. Once they've identified those three, what's the next step? And in that step, I want you to include what women or men, whoever's being victimized, because I'm telling you, brains, there's a lot of women, okay? I know a couple women that's wailing on their men right now, and their men are doing all that they can not to hit them back, but you got to defend yourself, okay? Mm-hmm. So what are things that should be incorporated when you go to get the restraining order? You know, you said that there was certain verbiage that was in your restraining order. Is there certain verbiage that we're looking for?
Yes. So one thing you should do also, if you know you're going to leave, have your papers in order. Make sure you have your driver's license, your birth certificate, even copies of them. Like if you don't want the abuser to know, you do that. You know, copies of passports. You can always get another green card. Don't let them tell you, oh, I have your green card. You can't leave me. You know, have yourself, you know, in order. And when you go down to the police station or you call the police, tell them exactly what's going on. Start with what brought you there that day and explain to them very clearly what is it that you are afraid of, you know. You know, and what's happening, and then go back from there. Because a lot of times victims will come in, and this one's happened to me, and she's like, well, in 1985.
Right.
And then 5 hours later, we're barely up to today. And we're kind of going all over the place, you know? So just have yourself prepared. Also, if you have a pet and you want that pet, make sure the pet is licensed to you and you are taking the pet to the vet, and that's all in your name. Also have that, you know, in order. And again, explain what you're afraid of, what you're concerned of. And there is in New Jersey, and I'm sure in other states, victim's compensation. So that if it's because you're afraid of money, when you have the final restraining order, there are funds available to help you, you know, relocate. There is job training out there. So inventory yourself, because you're going to have to, you know, be prepared not only to go into court, and if you can't afford an attorney, there are women's centers in every county that can help you find pro bono attorneys or advocates that can go with you. Every base that you're worried about can be covered. There are shelters available. It's hard to go into a shelter right now. They have every place has different protocols with the COVID-19. But you know, all this is available. The shelters are available, you know, to bring your children in. But take an inventory of yourself, because you don't realize you have talents. And I remember seeing this, it was either Family Circle or Women's Day, thinking, okay, well, I've been a PTO mother now. I was a trader, now I'm a PTO mother, baking brownies. But you still have skills and talents. Mm-hmm. So don't think you don't have any. Even running a house is not easy. Staying on budget, paying the bills. You know, a checkbook is like keeping, you know, books in order, right. You know. Even if you're in financial stress, and because I remember once I didn't have 3 cents to my name, and they were doing a collection for my kid's teacher, $10, and people are like, oh, who doesn't have $10? I'm like, I don't have 3 pennies, you know. But how do you manage? And you are a manager, and right. Take the, you know, and you can write a resume with that. You can find a job. You have more skills when you do your self inventory, and you have talents.
Right.
So not only think about, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get this, you know, restraining order, but take advantage of the county services, the state services. You know, if you're afraid of a computer, they have all, even your local library has, you know, free sessions, how to use a computer. Mm-hmm. Take advantage of everything.
You said something very interesting about the pet, brought up something. I had a girlfriend that we were sitting in the car, we were talking on our break. And I looked down at her legs, and she had the most horrific bruises. And then I turned around, and I saw other bruises on her. Oh. And we had the conversation, but I love him. Well, that's not love, baby.
No.
And it's not reciprocal. And all of that, I won't do it again. You got one time to put your hands on me. One time, okay? Because if I let you get away with it once, it's going to happen again.
Yes, it is. And it's going to be worse.
But about the pet, she called me on the phone and she was hysterical. And I said, well, what's wrong? Girl, he had socked a little chihuahua in the eye and the doggone dog had a black eye. I was like, a chihuahua?
Mm-hmm.
So I had no idea that they would go off on the mm-hmm. pets.
They'll kill the pet.
Uh-oh.
Yes, and wow. they'll kill the pet. Mm. And people don't understand. It's every social
network. Rockwaller.
Yeah. You know what? They hurt the pets, and the same with the children. You know, here it's interesting. I live in a county that has a very rural area, a very suburban, and a very urban area, and people always assume that the child abuse is going to be in the urban areas. And actually, we had more children under the age of 5 murdered by the abuser actually in the rural areas. So no area is exempt from this.
No. I had another very high profile woman on my show that was being abused by her husband. And it ended up horribly because the family said, okay, his family said, okay, can we keep the kids? She let them keep the kids. They in turn let him get the kids. He ended up murdering himself and the kids.
Yes. Yes.
So when someone tells you that I am being, you know, I'm being assaulted, it's just like a child coming to a parent and saying, somebody's touched me inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to them. Hear them.
Absolutely.
And then start observing what's going on. They're coming mm-hmm. to you because they trust you. They're coming to you because they're yes. in fear. They're coming to you because they don't think that there's any way out. They're coming to you because this person keeps putting that trickery on them that you're not worthy, you're not important. You need to use your voice. You need to use your power. Document things. Get a cell phone, another cell phone. That's what me and my husband do. When we change out our cell phone, we take that cell phone and give it to the women's shelter.
Yes.
You know, so that they have a phone number that people call. Brains, keep you some money. God blesses the child as God his own. Okay? Something. Yeah. You know, if you know that this is going on, okay, you still have money for food or whatever, $5, $10, put it aside for your escape plan. Donna, you are amazing. Now, you've written a book, or you're in the process of writing a book.
I'm in the process of writing about my story. You know, going, I mean, I was, you know, here I am, a trader in the 80s, living in Manhattan, get married, think everything's going to be wonderful, not so wonderful. And I talk a lot about the journey out. You know, you'll notice a lot of times people write a book and they talk about all the abuse, and then we get to the end. Oh, we're happy. But there's a bridge there that people don't talk about. How do you cross over? How do you rebuild a life? How do you even build a life? That's more what I talk about, my experience. And people that come into your life, it might only be for a moment that, you know, make a difference. And it could be so tiny as when you start realizing, I think something's not quite right. I remember a man, I used to go to a coffee shop with the other mothers when my kids were in elementary school. And there was, you know, there's always that group of men that are solving the world problems in the morning in these coffee shops. Right? Well, one of them came over to me at once and he said to me, sometimes you're in a marriage and one person is just oppressing the other person. He was like, did you ever really think about that? Wow. And I, and that, you know, that's such a little tiny conversation, but that was very powerful. Because he said, you know, and he talked about, like, you know, how that person that's just being oppressed and held down is so much more.
Yeah, like a knee on your neck.
Yep. And so there's all these little things. And I had always known, like, about graduate assistantship programs where you get your master's free. So, and they give you a stipend and things and you work on the campus. So I wanted to apply for that. But every time I went to do it, my ex got abusive. And so I finally got to an open house and I wanted to be an art historian. And, but here's the problem. You have to be really, you know, really fluent in German or French. Second languages are not my forte. So I just sat there and I'm like, oh, and a woman came over to me and said to me, you have a business background and you and degrees in the arts. Would you like to be our guinea pig in the arts management program for your MA?
Wow.
I was like, sign me up. Just sign me up. But now as I'm studying for my GREs, I, another little thing, at the time I wanted to get a job, you know, a part-time job. And there was a sick bird in my yard. And my neighbor was like, what do we do with this sick bird? Now remember what I'm living through, right? And I'm looking at my neighbor and I'm like, you want me to take care of your sick bird that's laying on the ground? You know, it was a wild bird. I'm like, so I called animal control and I said, I got a, my neighbor's all upset about a sick bird. My whole life is falling apart. I got my electricity getting shut off.
Right.
So this woman came and we're good friends now. And she said, well, I'm going to bring the bird. I take care of the, you know, I'm head of animal control. I take care of them. I'll bring it to my house. Do you know anybody who needs a job in a theater at the local college? And I'm like, oh, I do. And I actually ended up working at a university that I teach at now, but as the house manager. And I was able then to study for my GREs during the show when I wasn't needed.
What is GREs?
It's the test you have to take to get into grad school. All math, English. Like, oh yeah, a nightmare, especially when you're old. It's a nightmare when you're young, more of a nightmare when you're older. And so now I was able to not only have this job, but, you know, even if it was only for a few hours a week, but I was able to study while the show was going on.
Right.
And then get to the point to take the GRE. I actually, on my own, burned my leg with second and third degree burns. That was actually not his fault. And I went wrapped like a mummy. And because what happened was, because of the abuse, I kept missing the exam. And the school called me and they said, look, we still have one spot, but you've got to get that GRE in. And I went Wrapped Like a Mummy and I took my GRA, and that was the beginning of a whole new world. I worked for a gentleman, and you know, who was a little bit older than me, and I was his grad assistant in the theater department. And when I walked in, he was like, "Oh yay, a soccer mom who doesn't know a computer," you know.
Wow, wow. And so you know, you've done all these wonderful things. And as we conclude, I want to ask you, how did you find the strength, the wherewithal, the courage to love Donna Lynn again?
Ooh, I think there was a song about in my daughter's eyes. I can't remember the song now. And you're my reflection in her eyes and what would happen to her. And I think being validated again. And I think a lot of it came from going out there and working with victims as a volunteer. And starting to realize that my experience, I was really saving, you know, people, that I'm sort of a connector. So I even have students that come to me, they're in trouble, mom's in trouble. And so by going back out in the community and volunteering, it kind of validated my experiences. And then being invited from that to teach at the universities and making a whole new world. And then my friends and my friends, you know, it's hard, but people can do it.
They can
do
it.
You absolutely can.
And Brains, in this interview, see that the bird landed up there for a reason.
Yep.
You know, because we've used the analogy of birds, and I want you to know that you do have maybe a broken wing, but it will heal, and baby, you will be able to fly, and you will be able to fly away, and you will be able to soar like an eagle. Thank you so much, Donna, for being here on the
Oh, thank you, April.
I think you're awesome sauce. When that book gets out, this interview is never old. Send it on this way. We're going to put it out there. We're going to give somebody out there an opportunity to win one, because it's important that we have this information. Again, like we said, I will put the domestic violence hotline number at the bottom of this interview.
Wonderful.
If you want to contact Donna, what would be the best way to contact you for consultation or information?
I guess email. Email. Okay. Do you want me to send you my email information?
Yeah, and we'll put that also at the bottom of the interview. And I thank you for being a woman of courage.
Thank you.
It does take courage. You know, this is not for chumps, okay? And there's a lot going on in the world right now, and this just adds to the turmoil. But again, know that we're going to make it. We're going to be all right because we're strong.
April, you're awesome, April. And thank you for what you do. Thank you.
Well, you know what? I knew from the time I was 5 years old that my gift was communication. And it wasn't just because I talked a lot, Brains. But I want to use my powers for good and not evil. I don't want to get caught up in the mundane, because I am a solution seeker, not a problem describer. And that's what we do here on The Edge.
Love it.
We want to find some solutions. So thank you so much. Come back. Always
thank you.
Table for you. I love you, my sister. Stay strong.
Love you too. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Brains. Bye. Have a good day. Keep your hands to yourself.
That's right.